Back to Pete and Chad on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Yeah, you know, we feel good about it. I think we did a lot of good things. We didn't give them too much, I think, in the RD zone. We didn't give them too much, and we played pretty smart. And getting that first one is always important, especially getting a road one. It's huge for us.
And absolutely, defensive zone coverage has been really good for this hockey team since the middle of January, when it was atrocious in November and December. The breakout's been solid, and obviously puck pursuit. Interesting part about this, both teams, Ken Hitchcock, known as a puck pursuit type of coach. So it's sort of an interesting concept from that perspective. We are talking about the Minnesota Wild, St. Louis Blues. The series is led by the Wild by a score of 1-0. Game 2 slated for 2 o'clock in St. Louis today. And we are honored to have Derek Van Deest from the Edmonton Sun as he's with us. Derek? Good morning to you.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Wonderful, thank you. Just from your perspective, your takes on Game 1 from that series in St. Louis.
Well, for me, I'm here covering the series for Sun Media in Canada, so I don't really, I'm not too familiar with the teams. I've seen them a couple of times. I travel with the Edmonton Oilers during the season, and so I know a little bit about the Blues and the Wild, but I was really impressed with the Wild speed in Game 1, and I think the Blues really tried to be physical, and they were trying to get the puck in deep and trying to really get in on the forecheck and use their size advantage, I think. But I think they were taken surprised a little bit by how quickly the Wild moved the puck and got the puck up out of the zone and their speed, and I think the Wild speed really neutralized the Blues' size, and they couldn't get in on the forecheck because by the time they got in, the puck was heading back the other way, and I was really impressed by the Wild speed, not just their team speed in general, but the way they moved the puck and got it out of the zone really quickly. And I think that's something that St. Louis is really going to have to make adjustments in Game 2, because they just couldn't get in there quick enough to create turnovers and to create offensive zone chances by getting in on the defenseman. And that was something that really impressed me and really stood out to me in Game 1 of that series, is how well the Wild defenseman moved the puck out of the zone. And I think that's something that I'd seen them do it against the Oilers, but the Oilers didn't have as hard a forecheck as the St. Louis Blues did. So that really impressed me in Game 1, at how quickly and how well they moved the puck out of the zone.
Derek, so just fill us in. How does it work for you guys? Or I guess, who did you make mad to draw the St. Louis-St. Paul series, as opposed to heading out to Anaheim or heading to Nashville and Chicago? What happened there for you?
Well, we have papers basically in Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, Ottawa and Toronto. So those other papers, because Calgary was in the playoffs, they had their own writer cover that series. Because Winnipeg was in the playoffs, they had their own writer cover that series. So, as you all know, Edmonton hasn't made the playoffs in 9 years. So once playoff comes around, we hockey writers have plenty of time on our hands. So there's a couple of us, and because we're familiar with the Western Conference, they send one of our writers, Rob Tuchkowski, went to cover the Chicago National series because we didn't have a Canadian team in it, and then I came out here to cover the St. Louis Blues Wild series. And the reason they sent us out here is because we have some familiarity with teams. We play them. Well, we used to play Minnesota 8 times a year at one time,
right.
And then they went down to 6, and then I think it was only 4 times this season. So we have some familiarity with teams. So that's how they kind of spread us out in Canada. Obviously, the playoffs are a huge deal, and everyone is excited at this time of the season. Unfortunately, in Edmonton, we haven't seen playoff hockey since 2006.
We were speaking with Derek Van Deest from the Edmonton Sun, and you obviously got to see Devan Dubnyk up close and personal. And, you know, I got to say, when I look back to when the Oilers would come into the XL Energy Center, from my perspective, it would be, you know, fine goalie, but not a factor. You know, granted, the team, it was a little bit different in front of them than is the one right now particularly. But clearly, would anybody in the Edmonton viewing public and media have ever expected this kind of surge from his game?
No. Not in the way he's really just rebounded his career and saved his career, really. And Devan Dubnyk was a guy that the Oilers had, you know, they'd selected in a first round. He was the goaltender that they thought they could develop into a really good number one goaltender coming through. And they took their time with him. He went and he played in the East Coast League, and he played in the American Hockey League. And this was a guy that they really did a good job developing. And then once he got to the NHL, under Ralph Kruger, who was coaching there during the lockout season, they really thought, okay, this is going to be our guy. He's going to be a very good goaltender. But for whatever reason, when Dallas Eakins took over in Edmonton, and he had just a horrid defensive system that really exposed Devan Dubnyk early on. And, you know, you were looking at guys were wide open in front of the net with this defensive system. And that really hurt his confidence. And then once his confidence went down, and then it was one of those things where he would admit that he had a bad season. But I think a lot of people were upset that they gave up on him so quickly after developing him for so long. And they gave up on him. And, you know, Devan had such a bad year that he kind of bounced around three organizations. But I think a lot of people are very happy for Devan Dubnyk that he's able to revive his career, because he's such a good guy. He's such a down-to-earth guy. And he's one of those good guys that you really root for and you really want to do well. So in Edmonton, they're kind of upset that, oh, look how well Devan Dubnyk is now. Maybe we gave up on him too soon. But I think they are really happy for him just because of the type of person he is. And to see him do what he's doing right now with the Minnesota Wild is something that a lot of fans are looking at going, well, you know what, we probably gave up on this guy a little too soon.
We're talking with Derek Van Deest of the Edmonton Sun, who is here in St. Louis getting ready for Game 2. What do you expect to see, Derek, in Game 2, and what do you think the Wild need to do to win and go up 2-0?
Well, you know, I was thinking of this, and you know, you're looking at Ken Hitchcock, who's one of the premier coaches in the league, and I'm sure he's gone through that video of Game 1 over and over and over and over again. And just talking to him yesterday, he says, oh, we got to amp up the physicality. We're going to get more physical than we do in Game 1. And I do expect him to come out and really come out and be fired up for this game, but I'm not convinced that they're going to try and be more physical. I think they're looking at that tape and they're going to say, you know what, we can't get in on that forecheck quick enough to them. I do think they're going to try and clog up that neutral zone a little more and to try and basically counteract Minnesota's speed through the neutral zone, because I think in that first game when they did try to get in on that forecheck, and they really gave a lot of room behind them to Minnesota to move the puck out and come at them in the neutral zone, they gave up a lot of odd man rushes. So when he says they're going to be more physical, I can see that, but I don't think they're going to be as aggressive on the forecheck. I think they are going to kind of take a step back and say, you know what, we can't get in there quick enough. They move the puck too well. So I don't see them doing that. I think they'll still try to chip the puck in, but I don't think they'll send three men in to try and create offensive zone turnovers. I really believe that the Wild defensemen are just too good at moving the puck, so they're going to have to kind of sit back and make them come through them as opposed to giving more man rushes.
Derek, I agree with you 100% on that. And the one thing that's been interesting about this Wild team is, you know, a few years ago they wanted to be the team that played really heavy down below the dots, even though they didn't really have the personnel, I don't think, to get that done. They've proven now that they can transition through the neutral zone with speed. And we saw so many times, we mentioned in our first segment in hour one about how it just felt like there were so many odd man rushes and weak side guys open on the rush across the line that they didn't even need to go below the dots. But, you know, one thing that's, I think, underrated about this Minnesota team is the addition of Chris Stewart's been absolutely huge. Mikko Koivu is not a small guy and as good a two-way player as you're going to find. Kyle Brodziak's a big body. And you know what? Bergenheim is a playoff player. I mean, I guess we're all kind of watching him with guarded vision here because we didn't see much here at the close of the season, nor did the Florida Panthers at that point. But I think Minnesota has shown that they can play both ways. I'll be curious to see how they respond to a clogged up neutral zone, because I agree with you thinking that'll happen. Do you think Minnesota can handle that?
I think they can, because they can also play that dump and chase game and try and create turnovers in the offensive zone. And to me, I was looking at the two blue lines of the team, and they look, you know, the Blues have big, strong, heavy defensemen that they can move the puck, but I think I was really impressed with the speed of the Wild defensemen and how quickly they just move the puck and how good they are and how good they are seeing the ice. And of course, we don't get the luxury of seeing Ryan Suter every day. And to me, he had a fantastic game in Game 1, and he's such a special defenseman. And I think it's such a treat to watch. And I'm really looking forward to kind of seeing him more than just once every, you know, whatever it is, 20, once or twice during the season. And I just watching him last night, you really got a sense of how good he is and how much he plays and how big of a part he plays to this team. So I think the Wild will be able to do that. I think they're probably expecting a bit more clogged up neutral zone. I don't think it's a big secret that they're going to expect, you know, four or five guys between them and the net. And they're going to have to play a bit more of a, I think, dump and chase game. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to pull it off.
Back in your home of Edmonton, it's a big night with the NHL draft lottery coming up tonight. Edmonton Oilers with the third best odds at 11.5%. What do you think this will be like the first year of the lottery, and how long have Oilers fans been waiting for today and their hope for landing the first pick in Connor McDavid?
Well, they've probably been waiting for today since November, since they realized that they weren't going to make the playoffs this year again. You know, it's been some lean years in Edmonton, and they've won the lottery three times already, so it's interesting. You start to wonder, you know, how many times can they win the lottery and not kind of get any better? And, you know, obviously if Connor McDavid comes in Edmonton Oilers, that's going to really amp up the rebuild here. But I don't think it's going to happen. I just don't see that kind of luck happening to Edmonton to get the lottery pick four times in the last 6 years. I know a lot of Oilers fans are hoping that happens, but I think the Oilers are really going to have to dig in and start doing their homework here. Not only on the first round picks, I think they'll get probably the second or third pick the third or fourth pick in the draft this year. They really have to do a better job of drafting in the second and third round and the fourth round. I think that's really been their downfall. They've gotten the first overall pick, but they really haven't done much with the 31st pick. They haven't done much with the 61st pick. They haven't done much with the 91st pick. And that's the reason the Edmonton Oilers are in the trouble they're with right now. And they have to do a better job drafting in the later rounds.
Well, when the Oilers are playing great, that's great for the National Hockey League. So count me as one that's watching that closely, want to see that club propel themselves into the playoffs. Have always been a fan and think they're important for sure to the league. Derek, hopefully you can join us next week as the playoffs continue. We enjoyed the discussion and enjoy the game today.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I appreciate you guys having me on.
All right, thank you very much. That's Derek Van Diest from the Edmonton Sun. When we come back, Alex Pruitt from the Washington Capitals, their beat writer of the Washington Post, joining us right after this on the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Clutterbuck works in. Here's a 2-on-1 with Cizikas. Clutterbuck fires. He scores. John Tavares. For Strome on a one-timer, he scores. Long drive coming. Bluffed by Green. There's one. Score! Carl Alster! Bailey on the move. Cross rink wide open here. A poke zone. Fires. He scores. Iskinen towards the goal. Block. Rebound. Score! Ovechkin on the follow-up. Caps have it. Chimera fires. Pad stop. Rebound. Chimera. Score!
Jay Beninati on the call. Of course, the Washington Capitals big winners yesterday over the New York Islanders as they even their series at one apiece. That game was 4-3. Big to see Alexander Ovechkin score. And always the grizzled veteran Jason Chimera stepping up big when it mattered most. We are happy to bring in Alex Pruitt. He's the Capitals beat writer for the Washington Post. And what a night for the Caps last night, Alex. Thanks for joining us here this morning.
Been a dream of mine to come on since I was young. So this has been awesome for me.
Yeah, I'm sure you feel like you've really you've probably hit an all-time low at this juncture. But no, nonetheless, I mean, there's so many layers of this. One of the things is Philip Grubauer comes in goal. Braden Holtby plays 23 of 82 games. Gets sick when there's some time off of some sort or whatever. And now you've got kind of an unknown commodity. You're down one game to none as a club. You got to hang your hat on this kid, and he gets the job done.
Yeah, he didn't face a whole heck of a lot of work. Only 7 shots in each of the 3 periods, allowed 3 goals, made 18 saves. But, I mean, there's a reason he was in there, and it's because he wasn't necessarily an unknown commodity to the guys in the locker room and the coaching staff. I mean, he had been up a couple times last year. I think this was his 21st career start, but first in the NHL playoffs. Handled it extremely well, composure-wise, because you're right, it was a tough situation. I don't think anyone really knew that Holtby wasn't going to go until probably mid-afternoon. Grubauer knew he was the choice if Holtby didn't go, but they were still trying to figure out if he was going to be able to play. I think this was a sickness that cropped up before game one, and I imagine playing game one couldn't have made it any better. It sounded like things got kind of worse in the locker room after the morning skate. Everyone still thought he was going to play because, as you said, he played 73 games. But they brought up Grubauer's cautionary measure, and they wound up needing to use him, and he wound up getting his first win in the playoff game.
Alex, what's on tap for today? You driving to beautiful Long Island?
I am. I am in route right now. They got practice at 2 o'clock, so getting up there.
What about the second period yesterday? What was working so well for them out-shooting the Islanders, what, 18-7?
Yeah, everything that didn't work for them in the first game, basically. The two games that they played at Verizon Center kind of show the best and the worst of the way the Capitals can play against a speedy team like the Islanders. In game one, they looked like they were standing in quicksand in the neutral zone. They couldn't really pass the puck even to wide-open people. And they just kind of got knifed through by the Islanders. And yesterday, they used their size a lot more to their advantage. Their forwards more ferocious. They were able to hem the Isles in their zone for long, long stretches at a time. Got the crowd going behind them. A lot of the players were saying it's the loudest they've ever heard that building in probably the past 5 years. So everything kind of came together during that second period. The momentum started to shift. I think they felt like they had the Islanders where they wanted them in terms of on the ropes. They gave up the early goal to Clutterbuck on a pretty bad, or it was an over aggressive play by Mike Green in the offensive zone. He pitched a little hard and he ended up giving up a 2-on-1. From pretty much after that point, except for that one goal that kind of let the air out of the building in the second period, they did a really good job of just kind of hanging on and never really letting up. For that whole second period, it really felt like they were just going to come back and win that game, which they obviously ultimately did.
I've been a huge Barry Trotz fan, and of course, we're speaking with Alex Pruitt, the Capitals beat writer for the Washington Post, but I've been a huge Barry Trotz fan watching him do his work in Nashville. Does it feel as though, with the structure he brings to this team or to his teams, as though this playoff season could be different from perhaps years past with what he offers?
Yeah, that's at least how the Capitals feel. I'm sure the fan base has been heartbroken too many times
sure.
to get super positive about stuff like that, but that's certainly how the players feel. They went into the playoffs saying they'd never really felt this confident at this time of the year in a long time, maybe not just the President's Trophy teams, So I think that has a lot to do with the way they handled struggles this season, and even the game one to 8-2 turnaround is a pretty good example. I don't think they had a losing streak longer than four games this season, and that was way back in November. On the flip side, they didn't have a winning streak longer than four games this season. So they did a pretty good job of kind of correcting their issues, of playing Barry's style. They were the hottest team in the entire NHL about December to mid-January, maybe other than the Rangers, because they got into a groove there. I definitely think that there's a lot more confidence. They feel like the way they play is better suited to the playoffs. I think in years past they were what they would call a little more one and done, just kind of chip the puck, get one shot attempt, or if the rush isn't working, then they're not going to get anything this year and last night in particular. You saw what they do when they wear teams down their forecheck.
All the Minnesotans know about the Islanders, or the Minnesotans that are on the Islanders. You've got Letty and Bailey, Clutterbuck, the former Wild player, Anders Lee, Kyle Okposo, Brock Nelson. What about Matt Niskanen, though? Former Bulldog from Duluth in his first season with the Capitals, a guy that the Wild thought about going after a little bit. How has he been in his first season, especially with two assists last night?
He's been pretty good. Got his first 82-game season of his career. He spent the entire year with Paul Osmer. The production wasn't there that it was last year when he had a career year for the Penguins that earned him this pretty gaudy contract. But, he's been a stable presence. He's been a pretty good two-way defenseman. Had a pretty bad game one, wound up -4. Wasn't very sharp in terms of his passing, in terms of his breakout stuff. But had a much better game yesterday, as did Altner. Obviously, as did the whole team. But, Niskanen's been pretty good. He's kind of set up shop as one of the two guys, him and Green, or generally the two defensemen on the second power play unit. He kills penalties. Among the team leaders, a nice time. He blocks shots. He's able to get up in the rush. So I think he's been everything that they hoped he could be, and just another one of the guys who they hoped to stabilize the defensive core. The last year was pretty banged up and had a lot of depth issues.
When the series returns to the dump on the island, what do you expect to be brought to the Capitals in that one?
The two games they played there this year, the Capitals lost both in overtime when they had a guy in the penalty box. So they were kind of undone by their own errors. So I expect probably more of the same. It's going to be interesting to see how they carry over the momentum. I mean, it was ear-splittingly loud at Verizon Center last night, and now it's going to get equally loud tomorrow afternoon and then Tuesday at Nassau. I mean, the Owls fans want to ensure that they get a game six there. By virtue of the win last night, Verizon Center ensure that they'll get a game five there. So I think the Caps, expect a tough atmosphere. I think Niskanen was saying a couple of years ago when he played at Nassau, it was the loudest he'd ever seen a playoff game in his experience. So, I'm kind of curious to see. They snatched momentum pretty hard last night, so I'm curious if it's going to carry over to Nassau. But, if the season series is any indication, it's going to be as tight as it's been. Game one was certainly the anomaly in that regard.
We're talking with Alex Pruitt of the Washington Post. Alex, a former intern with the Minnesota Star Tribune. It's your first season on the Caps beat. Does it ever get old watching Alex Ovechkin now with gray hair but still playing goalie?
No, not through 1 year so far. It's interesting because I don't have the firsthand context of what happened last year and in years past, so I'm kind of just have to go off what people are saying and going back and watching old things and reading old things. But by every measure, he's having an MVP caliber season. Probably going to finish second to Price in our trophy voting. You can go by anything you want. You want the eye test, plus minus, his possession numbers, his scoring has remained the same, but everything else has improved. His two-way game under Barry Trotz has gotten a lot better. He's back-checking. He's covering the way their system works. Defensemen are given a lot of freedom to pinch in the offensive zone, and that means that the forwards have to come back high and cover for them if that happens. So Ovechkin's done a pretty good job kind of buying into that system, and the production's been there. And, there are games, just like Holtby has lugged them onto his back at times this season, so too has Ovechkin carried them through a couple games, through a couple wins. And, to do what he did goal scoring wise alone in a season when scoring across the league was down was pretty remarkable in itself, getting to 50 for the sixth time this season.
The one thing that he does too, Alex, is 50 goals in this era is next to, that's like scoring 80 back in the day when goals were at a premium in this league. But I think one of the most underrated aspects of his game is his compete level is off the charts. This guy is so competitive, but he's also very physical and effective with the physical play. That can't help but help this team off the end boards with the way he plays. He's out here scoring 50 goals, and this guy is not afraid to get dirty. The rest of the guys have to follow suit.
Yeah, I think a couple things there. I think his adjusted goal scored would probably put him up on par with Hull's season, whatever it was. Trotz is partial to comparing him to Mark Messier in terms of the physicality, because he hasn't been a physical superstar like that since Messier, which seems reasonably apt. If you don't want to get hit by that guy, he's 230 pounds of just thick oak tree. and he comes after you on a forecheck. You see a lot of guys. And that's kind of what the Capitals are trying to hang their hat on. It's not just Ovechkin. They want teams to give the puck away a little bit earlier than they have to because they see a freight train barreling towards them, and Ovechkin's certainly the catalyst for that. When he comes out on his first shift, he's flying, and he's checking people and rattling glass and stuff. You can definitely see it. It lights a fire on the rest of the team.
Well, that's great stuff. Alex, welcome home of sorts here on the program. I didn't know you were part of the Star Tribune staff for a while there, so welcome home on the show. That's we'll take it. You're one of us now. You know how it goes. So hopefully you can join us next week as the series progresses. We'd love to have you on and continue the discussion, if that'd be okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. Congratulations.
Enjoy the Long Island Marriott.
Hey, thank you.
And the dump known as Nassau Coliseum. Alex Pruitt.
Cash for water bottles.
The beat writer for the Washington Capitals from the Washington Post. When we come back, we're going to hear more from the Winnipeg Jets. Ken Wibley is going to join us as he is embedded in Anaheim covering that series between the Jets and the Ducks. This is On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Welcome back to the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. If you just joined us, we opened the show looking at the Minnesota Wild, St. Louis Blues. We brought on Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We talked about that just vile series in Vancouver with Calgary. That was awesome for an old fart like me. It was great to take a jog back into the 80s for a moment. Then we were joined by Adam Vinion from the Nashville Tennessean. Last segment, it was Derek Van Deest from the Edmonton Sun. Two segments ago. And then we talked to Alex Pruitt, the Capitals beat writer from the Washington Post. And now we are honored to bring in Ken Wieb from the Winnipeg Jets beat writing world and the Winnipeg Sun. Ken, good morning. It's early out there in California, isn't it?
No, not too bad, guys. Not too bad at all. Just having a little breakfast here, and everything's good. Ready to get to the rink. Not as much hostility as the Vancouver-Calgary, but certainly some hard hitting with the 83 combined hits in game one.
Well, we'll say yet, right?
Yet, exactly.
Yeah, so from your perspective, it felt from what I could see, you know, after two periods, and if I'm Winnipeg, I'm feeling pretty good about myself, and you know, Anaheim just finished. What caused that, and what did you see happen?
Well, definitely the Jets certainly played. You could make the argument they played as good a road game as you could probably play for 30 minutes or so. But the one thing, they let the Ducks hang around, guys. I think they had a couple opportunities. First, a Chris Thorburn chance on the 3-on-2 rush. Didn't quite get all of it. Sort of shot it at Anderson with not an empty net, but that was a pretty golden chance. And then Blake Wheeler with a chance that just hits the post instead of posting in. Yeah, they had a chance to go up 3-1 for sure and possibly as much as 4-1. They let the Ducks hang around. Ryan Kesler baited Mark Scheifele into that roughing minor in front of the net, that offensive zone penalty in the final minute, and that really turned the momentum. They got the power play goal from Perry early on a lucky bounce that ends up right in his stick. But to me, the game kind of shifted later in the second period. Matt Beleski laid out Toby Enstrom, and on the same shift, Francois Beauchemin drilled Mark Scheifele in front of the Jets bench, and the Ducks kind of really got some momentum going from there. So the Jets had been taking it to the Ducks physically, and that sort of turned the tables a bit. The power play goal was fantastic, and that goal that Corey Perry scored is one of the prettiest goals you'll see for the game winner. Blows by Tyler Myers. I can't believe how Andre Pavlik got his pad on the first chance, the backhand, and Perry, instead of having his momentum carry him into the corner, put the brakes on and found a way to get the rebound home for the winner, and it was impressive. No doubt about it, and I can't believe Pavlik even got his pad on it, but after that long review, it did count. It definitely was over the line. So I think it was a missed opportunity for the Jets, but at the same time, given their playoff inexperience, I think they played pretty well in game one and would certainly have some things to build on.
This Winnipeg-Anaheim series is one of the most anticipated ones, which is something you don't often hear about from basically a 1-8, but a lot of people are penciling them in as the winners of even the next series. Whoever wins this one, they say, will likely beat the Calgary-Vancouver winner. But are either of these teams going to be able to walk after this series, and how physical it's likely to be?
Yeah, great question. The Timu Solani Bowl is certainly not one that would be getting a whole ton of play in the USA, but it does seem to have a lot of interest because of the way the teams play. And everyone's kind of curious. The Ducks are at that point. Of course, they won the Stanley Cup in 2007, but they've been that team that's been built for long runs but hasn't been able to get it done the last couple of years, despite kind of owning the Pacific Division during the regular season. So there's a lot of anticipation on that front. Is Ryan Kesler the piece that puts them over the top? And as for the Jets, there's just so much interest in the series. You know, first time back for the franchise since 2007, but going beyond that, first playoff games in Winnipeg happening on Monday since 1996 in terms of Stanley Cup playoffs. So the anticipation there is you know, off the charts. And, you know, if somehow it's going to be crazy regardless. But if the Jets somehow find a way to win tonight and have a split on the road, the first, you know, sign of a goal at MTS Center might blow the roof off the joint. So I think it's going to be pretty a lot of fun. And there's a lot of interesting personalities in the series. You know, everyone's curious about Dustin Byfuglien. How he's going to come back. He's just played the two games since the suspension. And to be honest, he wasn't very good in game one, given his high standard of play during the course of the season. I would expect that he'll be much better in game two. Obviously, the Ducks stars carried them in game one. And Andrew Ladd was quick to say yesterday that, yeah, their best players outplayed ours, and that's one game we got to be better. So that's certainly one of the storylines to watch. But again, always it's the foot soldiers that sometimes determine these series. As long as you can even out with the top units, and the Jets weren't able to rise to that challenge in game one.
We're speaking with Ken Wiebe from the Winnipeg Sun. Of course, he is covering the Jets and the Ducks as they continue their series. Anaheim leads that by a 1-0 margin at this stage. And one of the things that you brought up is, you know, hoping to get back to Winnipeg tied at 1 to blow the roof off the place. One of the topics we talked about earlier today was, in today's NHL, a 2-0 deficit for some teams doesn't necessarily mean the series victory as much as it did maybe 15, 20 years ago. In the case of this series, do you see this one, you know, even if Winnipeg loses, it's awfully difficult to win in the MTS. I think it's very tough, and this could easily go back to Anaheim either way, 2-2.
Oh, bang on. You have two very good road teams also in the series, guys. Ducks were among the best in the league, and the Jets at the first half of the year were the best in the league on the road. So, again, it's not really a series until the home team loses to me. You got two really good teams overall and two teams that won't be rattled. The one thing for the Jets, because they had the nine guys dressed for their first playoff game, you probably feel better with the split. Who wouldn't? But, again, you're right. I don't think any team is feeling as, you know, as nervous about being down 2-0. But I think, too, despite as great as the atmosphere is going to be for Winnipeg, road teams flourish in that environment, too. You've seen the Wild come in and play some outstanding games in MTS because of that atmosphere. And I think that was one of the reasons why the Jets' home record until this year was sort of mediocre. The first year was great. The middle 2 years were not very good. And then this year was pretty good again. I think road teams get up to play in that kind of hostile environment and have that chance to silence the crowd as well. So as much of an advantage as maybe it was in the past, I think all kinds of teams really relish that that fun vibe and having the fans so into it.
It's fair to say that it doesn't scare you away from playing hockey. It actually is a fun thing. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. So I agree with you 100%. Sometimes those environments can be so much fun to play in, and silencing it is such a fun part of it that it does get tougher. And I think the Wild suffer that a little bit at the XL Energy Center, too.
Oh, yeah, bang on, especially in the rivalry between the Jets and Wild, because
awesome.
You get all the fans rolling up the highway and coming out for the pregame festivities across the street and getting fired up by the time the game starts. So, it's great atmosphere in all those rinks. And even, too, I thought the atmosphere, the painted orange here, was pretty solid for game one also. I know there's some people saying, oh, what about the crowd? Well, it doesn't get as much play leading into the games as it would in Minnesota or Winnipeg, but Ducks have a passionate fan base. They're not one of these. They're not a soft market by any stretch of the imagination. Their fans are into it too. So I think it's going to be another good one here tonight. Another real physical battle. Matt Golesky with one of the great quotes yesterday when he was brought up that there were 83 hits. He goes, "Hey, by the time the series is over, teams are going to combine for over 100 probably." So it is going to be a grueling physical series. But the Jets got a great taste of that down the stretch. They played St. Louis four times, and all those battles were very physical. And as you saw, the game against the Wild, that last game where the Jets were able to get the 2-0 victory, that was a physical battle as well.
Thanks to that button rivalry between the Jets and the Wild, Minnesotans pay a lot of attention to the Winnipeg Jets. And I heard from a lot of fans and even some media members who are very high on the Jets this postseason and are thinking that they could make a run to the Western Conference Final. What inclination do you have that says that might be true, or for fans looking to say that the Jets are going to make a run, well, why do you think they could do that?
Well, just the goaltending down the stretch was so good. You saw it firsthand. Andre Pavlik with the back-to-back shutouts on consecutive nights and then didn't give up a goal until the shootout against Colorado just to get the Jets in. He was 9-2-1 down the stretch after that soft goal from Barrett Jackman from just beyond the blue line, if you will. Their team defense has improved so much, and they're built a lot like the LA Kings. They have the size, the speed, and they have the experience behind the bench. And Paul Maurice, a guy who's got a team to the Stanley Cup final with the Carolina Hurricanes. So I think those are some of the reasons. They have better depth now. They've got some guys coming back from injury. Obviously, Matthew Perreault missed game one. I think he'll miss game two. He did skate full out yesterday during the optional, but he doesn't have his full mobility. The only way I see Perreault playing tonight is if Maurice is willing just to use him as a power play guy on the half wall, because their power play was pretty mediocre at best in game one, and that was it for the game with the Ducks getting two. So good depth, size, and speed. and, you know, good goaltending. Those are all reasons why, you know, too, on my bracket challenge, I do have the Jets going to the conference final before losing to either St. Louis or Minnesota. But having said that, they could be out of the series in five because the Ducks have all that experience and high-end talent as well. So that's what makes the playoffs fascinating. You got lower seeds that could go to the final, or you could be out in the first round.
Ken, we agree. I think Winnipeg is one of the scariest teams in the Western Conference, and I have them, if they get past Anaheim, playing in the final. I hate to say it, against Minnesota, I went homer there, but I felt as though they're playing they play the well-suited playoff style, and they're young enough yet veteran enough to make it happen. Hopefully you can join us next week as we continue our playoff coverage if you have the time.
Yep, sounds good, guys.
That'd be great. All right, thank you. That's Ken Wiebe once again from the Winnipeg Sun. He covers the Jets, and we'll be hearing, checking in from him next week as well. When we come back, we'll preview the Minnesota Wild St. Louis Blues coming up at 2 o'clock today, game two of their first-round playoff series in St. Louis. This is the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. The Minnesota Wild St. Louis Blues coming up today at 2 o'clock, and this is going to be something else. The Wild and Blue, you know, we've had a lot of the analysis, Chad Graff, come down the pipe. And it really comes down to really who executes better, the special teams and the goaltending and making things happen.
It does, and we've heard from people who are, you know, with several different teams today, covering several different series, and that's what it seems to come down to across the board. You know, I think that we heard from Jeremy, and as we talked about, you know, the Blues are supposed to and likely will come out flying today, but the Wild just need to weather that storm. Devin Dubnyk is probably going to need to make a big save or two. And after that, you know, after the 10-minute mark or after the first TV timeout, that's going to be a chance, I think, for the Wild to sort of regroup, to catch their breath, and then to see if they can go in and play that style of hockey that they played for most of Game 1 and what brought them a win in Game 1.
And you know, what the Blues decide to do, as we've talked about, maybe backing off the offensive pressure on the end boards and stepping back a couple to clog up and not give the Wild the opportunity to transition will be key. But one of the things that Mike Yeo talked about was getting better. Cut five, please. David Helmer?
Again, our focus has to be on getting better. It was nice to get this one for sure, you know, compared to the way we started in previous years here. But there's obviously an awful lot of work to be done, and I think that both teams will look at the tape and, you know, who uses it, you know, the next day to make whatever adjustments you need to make, or just more importantly, get reset and refocused is going to be a huge key.
We heard about the tape, and we talked a lot about that, and obviously Ken Hitchcock is a video maker. And he's one of the guys that's been around for a long time. He was the Kalamazoo K-Wings coach back when the Stars were in Dallas. He was hired from the Kamloops Blazers. He was a cutting-edge guy then in the 90s and continues to carry it through today. There's no question that he's going to be analyzing and preparing his team. He didn't win a Stanley Cup by accident, Chad Graff. So you can rest assured that his team will be prepared in all instances today.
Absolutely. I think the Blues are going to be very prepared and very motivated. And I think that gets into what, in my opinion, is the biggest storyline for the Wild heading into Game 2. In Game 1, it was all about, is their speed going to be enough of a factor? Are they going to be able to avoid the big physical play from the Blues? But going into Game 2 now, I think that the storyline is this Wild team has been so, so good with their backs against the wall, going all the way back, you know, three seasons even. When the Wild need to win, they find a way. They did it last season in the postseason, and you know, it's crazy to think they won their opening round playoff series against the Colorado Avalanche without ever having the lead in the series. It was, you know, their first lead in the series was the overtime game winner in Game 7 that moved them on. So this is their first chance that, you know, these guys on this roster have had a lead in a series. So now how this team that has done so well for so long with their backs against the wall, how they play today with a little bit of a cushion, I think, will be awfully telling.
Well, and it should pick up in intensity as well. Mike Yeo sure seems to think so.
For sure, I'm expecting them to play a physical type brand of hockey, and there were some big hits there. You know, there were some times where you know, they go in straight lines, they arrive on the body, and our guys are prepared for that, and I think they brace themselves for it in certain opportunities or certain situations. But yeah, for sure, I think that that's not uncommon for any series. I think as the series wears on, you end up seeing more scrums after whistles and a little bit more hatred towards each other.
So it's all about keeping your emotions in check and not letting the little things become big things, correct, Chad?
Absolutely, and I think that was, you know, one of the things that the Wild did well in Game 1 where, Steve Ott was running around, he was poking at Jason Zucker's collarbone, which, of course, he just came back from a broken collarbone.
What a jerk.
He was in Chris Stewart's face, and one of the things they did well was not getting baited into that. Look, if Steve Ott can take off, pretty much any Wild player, that's a win for the Blues. A, because the Wild aren't a great 4-on-4 team, but B, because...
It's Steve Ott.
Steve Ott isn't exactly a fair trade-off going to the penalty box, but they did a very good job of keeping that in control, not getting baited into a lot of that. And Chris Stewart and Charlie Coyle and Nino Niederreiter, these were all guys who I thought, used their size well in Game 1, and the Wild didn't back down from a physical game. It wasn't as physical, I think, as the Blues would have liked it, but the Wild, certainly didn't back down.
I forgot to include Nino Niederreiter in that package as well. But you go Stewart, Bergenheim, Brodziak, Koivu, Niederreiter, Parisi, who plays a very big game for not the biggest of guys in the world. A team that used to be characterized by this person, myself, and maybe many others, as a Chicago Blackhawks speedy team has really transformed itself in the course of 12 months, in my opinion, into a team that can be speedy and physical. And that's why this road game, quote-unquote, or that version of what they play is working so well. I think what they do is create so much trouble on the end boards, but can also transition. They can play pretty much any way that they need to. So a lot of this is going to depend today upon what the St. Louis Blues bring. Are they going to bring the heavy body off the boards and not get away from the game they think they can do? Or are they going to watch the Wild defenseman transition, boom, get it out, and have odd men through the neutral zone? I don't think, Ken Hitchcock prides himself. He calls his teams puck-pursuing teams. I have a hard time seeing them completely bailing on that, but I will suggest that they would probably do a less aggressive version in the offensive zone, kind of what we heard earlier in the hour from Derek Van Deest from the Edmonton Sun suggest we'd see.
Right, he had a great breakdown of that, and don't forget, this Blues team was so good on the forecheck for so long that I don't think that they can just have that evaporate come the playoffs. So I think that you'll see some of that. And the big thing for them is once they get established into the offensive zone, which they had a tough time doing in the second period of Game 1 and even for chunks of the first period in Game 1. But once they get established in there, they just did not do a good job of getting shots through to the net. The Wild blocked a lot of shots in Game 1. And they didn't do, St. Louis didn't do a good job of getting to the net. That should be where David Backes camps out, if St. Louis is going to play well. And David Backes really didn't have much of a factor in Game 1, aside from, picking up some late cheap penalty minutes when the game was virtually over. So, that's a good sign for the Wild that they kept those guys at bay and that for the most part, Ryan Reeves and David Backes and even Ott, with the exception of his, clowning around after the whistle. Those guys were pretty much invisible in Game 1, and that's a very positive sign for the Wild.
Steve Ott of about 7-8 years ago would have been effective, but I mean, this is Steve Ott 7-8 years later. So, you could do all of that and great, whatever. But it really comes down to winning hockey games and not being sucked into his garbage. And I think that's a very, very important, astute observation by you, Chad Graff. Finally, before we wrap this show up today, give me your honest take of what you think you're going to see coming out of St. Louis today. Final score.
I think that it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think the game, Game 1 was a low-scoring game. If you take away, the empty netters and the weird goal that the Blues had with a minute left. So I think that you're going to see a 2-1 game, and I think that the Blues are going to come out and just hit everything on skates. I think that the first period is going to be thrilling. I think that the Blues will probably take a lead early because of that. And then I think that the Wild come back, play a better game in the second. But I do see the Blues winning today, probably by a 2-1 score, a very tight-checking, physical game. And I think we'll be headed back to Minnesota with the series at 1-1, which, if we're being honest, at this point, No matter what, it's a good sign for the Wild. They're either heading back 1-1, which is always good when you can do that on the road after the first two games, or they're headed back with a commanding 2-0 lead.
I'm going to say 4-2, a little more goal scoring in this one. I agree with the tightening up of the game, but I think it's going to be an empty netter with that annoying buzzer going off of theirs, or horn,
right,
with the Saints marching in song that just totally angers you when they score. So I think we'll hear that as they score the empty netter. We come back to Minnesota tied at one apiece. I think it goes back to St. Louis 2-2. I don't think anybody's ever expected this to not be a 6-7 game series. Chad, that's going to do it for today. Thanks for joining us here from your hotel room on the phone, dangling for 2 hours talking Stanley Cup playoff hockey, the best coverage here in the Twin Cities.
It was a good show, and happy to do it. Next time we'll be in Minnesota, though.
We'll see you soon. Enjoy the game. By the way, don't forget our good friend Bart Archer has face-off against Alzheimer's at the Bloomington Ice Garden from 5:15 to 7 o'clock. $10 for adults, $5 for seniors and youth. Under 12 are free. Under 18, free with a youth jersey. After the game, you have a meet-and-greet with former NHL alum at the Hilton in Bloomington. That's $20 for that. Under 12 are paid with adult is free. Silent auctions will be there as well. Once again, that's from 5:15 to 7 at the Bloomington Ice Garden. Great cause. Face-off against Alzheimer's. Coming up, we're going to take it to the baseball diamond on Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.